You're listening to the Deeply Graphic Design Cast, the show about all things design, from the creative side to the business side and all points in between. Follow the show on Twitter at Wes McDowell. Want the gang to answer your question on an upcoming episode? Send in your listener question to questions@thedeependesign.com or via Twitter using hashtag DGDC. Here are your hosts.
Wes McDowell in Chicago.
Mikhail Morrison in Seattle.
Nick Longo in Los Angeles.
All right, welcome back to another exciting episode of the Deeply Graphic Design Cast. We want to thank everyone for continuing to listen to, we've made it to 130 episodes, you guys.
Damn.
If we were a person and those were years, we'd be long gone by now. So we started this a while back. Can't believe we've made it this far, but we can only thank you guys and
for sure.
Continuing to listen and telling friends and helping us catch on, like if not wildfire, at least like a kindling in the woods, you know. Only you can start forest fires.
There's our new tagline.
Yeah.
Like a kindling in a woods.
Yeah. So thank you guys for doing that. And,
thank
you know,
you.
We love the 5-star reviews,
everybody.
Of course. And we love when you tell a friend. We count on that. No ad budget here. So, so what have you guys been up to? Anything good, exciting?
Have you guys started watching that Abstract on Netflix yet?
Not yet.
Yeah.
I can't bring myself to yet. I know I should see it.
The graphic design one is a really nice one and just started it actually today. And I'm going to start showing it in class when I feel needed because it's a really good one on typography. And I think it's a kind of that lost kind of art with the way we produce so much on computer now. This one's only 39 minutes, so I'm assuming all of them are not long documentaries. There's about 12 or so that it looks like it launched with, and they really get into the whole idea of design. And what's neat is I'm hearing from people that aren't even designers who are seeing this and going, I totally get and appreciate your world now. You know, this is
right.
It's finally nice that we get some recognition,
that's
you know,
cute.
In this document documentary kind of way, you know?
Yeah.
So I really recommend it. Hopefully others are watching it. And I'd love to hear if anybody else has caught this one. It's really good.
Yeah, definitely need to watch it. I was thinking we should like have an episode about it, but I'm like, it's like 8 episodes. I don't know that I can commit to that.
Yeah.
But
it's a good thought.
Yeah, but something else that I've been kind of ingesting lately is, you know, everyone's listening. You obviously like podcasts because you're listening to this. But have you guys heard Missing Richard Simmons?
Oh, I was glued.
Yes.
Yeah, we've all heard it.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah, so if anyone's looking for another podcast to listen to also, that's a fun one. It's kind of Serial-esque, but it's
exactly
all about how Richard Simmons just up and went missing.
I gotta tell you, that guy tells a story so well on that podcast.
Yeah.
Obviously much puts a lot of production value into it with interviews.
I mean, not as much as we put onto this.
No, not at all. I mean, come on, you know, please.
We are prepared.
But what it says about people that they'd be that, it really, I think the aftermath of this is really interesting because it's showing that something that no one would ever think would be such a popular topic became the number one podcast, you know, in America, if not all over. That says a lot about, I think, just the topic, the way it was delivered. I was hooked. It was really interesting. Really interesting.
Yeah.
You know,
it just goes to show, like, if something's well done, it can be kind of a dumb subject matter. Like, not everyone cares about what happened to Richard Simmons, I guess, but
Tell a story.
They just tell. Gotta tell a story.
Without requiring audience members to know.
Did you listen to it, Mikhail?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
yet.
I gotta tell you.
I've heard raving reviews.
Even if you're just in the car and they're short ones. I think they're only about 30 minutes too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Each one.
I should while I'm just working.
And it's really.
Is it too distracting? Would you say?
No, it's totally.
When you're driving.
Totally easy.
No, when you're working.
Maybe.
Maybe because it's not like if you're actively thinking about something, but if you're doing more production
like
style
production
stuff,
based,
then,
okay, I'm gonna
then
keep
you'd
that
be
in
fine.
Mind. Yeah. That's cool.
All right, so we have another amazing listener question show. We like to do that on the tens, and we've been doing them live recently. But sorry, we forgot to announce the last one, so we're like, if we couldn't announce it, no one's gonna show up. So we'll just.
Oh, does that seem pathetic?
Like, should we take some? Let's each take a snap.
So
we got to take a
snapshot.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, Mikkel, we're insanely prepared. So that's, we're nothing if not that. So, but yeah, we got another great listener question show. We got something, I think, for everybody.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, let's give a little love to our friends over at FreshBooks. You know, what can we say about FreshBooks that we have not already said? We just love them. It's such a great program to use to set up your invoices quickly and easily, because who wants to spend any time on that? Best to leave that to the professionals. So I set myself up with FreshBooks a while back. Mikkel and Nick, you guys have done the same. Yes. And, you know, you're up and running within minutes. You upload your logo and it kind of pulls in your brand colors from your logo and just allows you to make really templatized, easy invoices. You can ask for deposits, so you don't have to make two different invoices. You just make one invoice and then click a checkbox saying, deposit please for this one. And that goes in, and you can always check on the status of your invoices to see if they've been viewed or not. And if they have not, you can always have them, you know, you can have set up automatic payment reminders. Mm-hmm. So that's great. So you don't have to worry about that. And what was the stat they gave us? They said that with FreshBooks payments, over 60% of invoices are paid within one day.
All right.
Which is pretty incredible.
Isn't that great?
Amazing. Yeah.
You know, one thing we've never really mentioned is just that it's cloud-based. I always think of this when I have to like revise or update just even one number on an invoice in the past. And you know the next time that client clicks on that link, because it's cloud-based, it's going mm-hmm. to be updated and everything, and all your records as well. So that was always the one thing I hated about doing it so manually, is that when mm-hmm. you make that one change, you got to change it everywhere, you know? Mm-hmm. And what a good peace of mind to know that when, especially like we talked last week, if you are struggling tax time right now as a freelancer, just try the FreshBooks thing. My God, it's going to make life so easy, you know?
Yeah.
Totally worth it.
I've been getting more and more emails and like listener questions from listeners where they kind of, they'll tack on something at the end saying like, you finally talked me into FreshBooks, which is great. It's good to know that people are catching on.
It's not easy to take the step, the very first step. It's a whole new ball game to get mm-hmm. used to. So I understand the hesitance for sure.
It's not hard to get used to. It's just the change sounds like change, but it's definitely
change
for the better. And it does
any
not
change is not as,
yeah,
especially when you're busy. It's difficult. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But it's going to save you time in the long run. So we've worked out a 30-day unrestricted free trial with FreshBooks for our listeners only. So go to freshbooks.com/deeplygraphic and enter Deeply Graphic Design in the How You Heard About Us section. So again, go to freshbooks.com/deeplygraphic and enter Deeply Graphic Design in the How Did You Hear About Us section, and you'll get free 30 days. Anna, so you can thank us later. Thank you, FreshBooks. All right, cool. On to the rest of the show. So we've got 6 questions here.
Awesome.
Yeah, good variety. So we got our first one is an audio question. We love those. And this is from Jeremy Jusso from Scotland. So roll that clip.
Hi, guys. Big fan here, coming from you from Edinburgh, Scotland. My question is, I've been trying to target very specific industries, specifically the renewable energy sector. I want my company to have some sort of social goal as well. And when I go to these specific industry events, because those are the people I want to meet, I find that when I'm there, they're either there to sell their own services or products, and or they're not ready to think about branding at all. And when I'm there, people just, they're not really trying to meet graphic designers. And then I have a hard time sort of connecting with them and talking about my services for them. And when I do follow up, they don't really write back at all. So maybe you have some insight on how to target very specific industries a little better. If you want to use my renewable energy industry as an example, that would be great. Thank you so much. Big fan. Bye.
All right, cool. Thanks, Jeremy. That was awesome. That's a good question. Nick, I think you have some strong feelings about this one.
I know. I'm glad
to start us off.
So cool that he thought of this idea, because I've struggled with this so many times from my previous years in my agency. I kept going to a lot of these trade shows that I went to for years just to keep up kind of the, you know, the relationships with a lot of people and the networking. And I always found that exactly what he said, these people are not there to find graphic design or creative partners for their business. They're there to sell. You know, they don't even, sometimes they don't even want to talk to you. But I love that he has this renewable energy interest. And I think that's the link. If he goes in there and really just tells them, introduces himself, compliment a company that he thinks might be doing a great job, and have a leave behind, have something that just says, you know, my company is also very interested in renewable energy, and we do graphic design and branding and creative for that. So if you're ever in need of that, I'm glad we met. You know, it's kind of like leave something behind that hopefully when you do follow up, if you made a great connection or an impression, I think that's a great start. And maybe they'll be like, oh, now we're ready. Now we need someone in that zone. And that they're not going to these events for that reason. So just use it to make the connection, I think would be a probably the better way to go at it, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's tough. I mean, even when you go to How Design or these creative ones, those people are there to promote their businesses. They're not there
right.
to find.
They don't
find,
see it as a networking fest.
Exactly.
Necessarily. Yeah.
Exactly. So make a. You know what? I go to this thing called the licensing show, and it's every year, and it's all of the entertainment brands and all of these people that are trying to find licenses to work to their product. But there's a lot of small product companies there that are great potential clients for me. So what I've done is I've made a very specific little flyer with a business card attached to it that has the work that is very much in their world. So when you meet these people, don't sell them, just kind of compliment them, tell them great job, love what you did with the booth. Hey, if you're ever in need of, you know, more packaging design or booth design or branding, here's my stuff. And it looks like it goes with that industry that you're talking to. So at least you're taking your best shot at, I think, hopefully making some connection with them.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think this really comes into play when you have a niche. And obviously this guy does. And I think the thing to what Nick, what you're saying is great. And you're saying going up and just kind of being a little innocuous and just, you know, hey, when you need it, here it is. I think it's also important, though, to really make it very clear that this is what you do. Like, you work with this industry.
Yeah,
I know it frontwards and backwards. And, you know, if you were going to go somewhere else, they may not know what you're, you know, where you're coming from, what your specific industry problems are, that kind of thing. Like, do a little salesmanship with it.
Yeah. There's an advantage to you having this common thread with them.
Yeah. Because that's the thing about like design niches. Very few designers actually have them, like including me. I don't even have one either. But I think that's the beauty part. And I think that's the main benefit of having one is for these kinds of events.
Correct.
You know, so you can go in there and just be like, I understand this way better than anyone else possibly could. So, and kind of give them a few reasons why they might need your services rather than just when you decide you need it. Like, be like, if you're doing, you know, web design, like you might be leaving a lot of money on the table because you haven't done this tactic and this tactic.
Yeah.
It's kind of people always, they'll exert a lot more effort to escape pain than they will to like go toward pleasure. So if you start bringing up a few things that maybe is holding them back that you could help them with, that's going to be huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know what that would be in that industry, but you know, you probably have a good idea about it.
Yeah. And I think you can tell too, if it's someone with maybe they seem like they're there for a great cause and there is obviously, you know, this business or this industry. I've always kind of zeroed in on the ones that maybe look like they need a little help with, because you get a glimpse of what they do graphically at these trade shows, right?
Oh yeah.
Their background, their booth, their business card, their flyers. So without me saying, you know, you need help, maybe those are the ones to, you know, go up to.
Your logo sucks.
Yeah. Let me guess, 99 Designs? No.
Yeah. Oh,
of all the companies I've seen here today, your logo is by far the worst.
Why not just pull the blimp card, yes?
Yeah. But see, you say that to everybody, and then everyone feels horrible about themselves, and you've got a lot of clients.
And you're that guy that everyone's exactly. going at the party talking about. Who was that guy?
Can you believe that, Jeremy? Jesus yeah. Christ.
Well, I hope this answers his question there.
Yeah, because, you know it's not like he was upset or anything, but I could tell there was a little bit of frustration there, so I mm-hmm. hope that was helpful.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Just, and... yeah, exactly. Hopefully you can be a little more... They'll be like, oh, we remember. Or you never know, yeah. man. You make this connection there.
Well, chance to relate. Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah. it's hit or miss, man. You know,
it is absolutely hit or miss. Mm-hmm.
And people may not be at these things looking for what you do, but it's also, I think that if you come with the right line, though, and the right angle, they'll definitely be open to it. Like,
yeah, and now he knows to be 100% prepared for that. And in which case, next time he'll over-prepare for that, and then something good will happen. Yeah. That's always how it works.
Like in the movie Hitch, I think the line is, no girl ever wakes up saying, God, I hope I don't get swept off my feet today.
Yeah.
And they can say, say the same thing about someone like, God, I hope no one tries to help my business today.
Of course.
Oh, I love it you just made a Hitch analogy. I love that. Well,
I know. Thank God for TBS. That... It's always on.
I know. Me and Hitch have so much in common.
I have to keep at it. And I watch the whole thing. I get sucked
in. It's one of those movies.
That's a great point because you're right. They are there for their business and the future. So they might just not want to spend the time there, make the connection, leave something to follow up with, and hopefully it makes an impression later down the road.
Yep.
You know?
All right.
Cool.
I think we can't do better than that. So the next one is from Teresa. So we've been getting some long questions too. So we love getting questions. We're not, but I will say like a few things. So like keep your questions kind of short and to the point because otherwise they're just too long and we have to edit them down too much. And we're afraid we're going to lose some of the core content of it. Yeah. And also we have been getting a few questions lately on specific podcast episode pages, like as comments. It's great to leave comments, but if you're asking us a specific question in relation to that episode, it's actually probably better for you to email it as a listener question, because otherwise it's too hard to keep track of where all these questions live. So just a statement to put that out there. So if you want us to answer, you know, probably email it to questions@thedeependdesign.com rather than put it as a comment on the show, if that makes sense, right? So this one is from Teresa, and this is a shortened version. So it says... I'm a graphic designer with a focus on web design, working as part of an in-house creative group for a large corporation. I'm mainly a front-end person, and I typically work with developers to implement functionality and more advanced things that are required on my projects. I can do aesthetics, strategy, CSS, illustration, yada, 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 you name it, all day, but web development is not my area. My company's recently let go of most of our development team, and as a result, my internal clients are looking to me for more and more development work. I'm skilled, I can figure things out, but it takes me a long time to get to the solution, and it's rarely elegant code. I've explained as tactfully as possible that this is not my area of expertise, but the requests keep coming, and I'm doing the best I can since I'm the only resource in most cases. Is this a trend in our field? Do designers need to be both designer and high-level developers now? Or am I being asked to do something out of the ordinary? How should I handle this?
Holy shit. That's my reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
this seems so unfair to me.
She doesn't have a good supervisor in any way.
No. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, we've kind of tackled things like this in the past.
Or you can play the card where you're like, sure, happy to do that for you at double the salary.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, money has to talk here.
Yeah.
If she's willing. You know, but it sounds like that's the first issue to overview.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, her company used to have a dev team. Now they've all been let go. So she's kind of been left holding the bag with all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
God, that would make me so uncomfortable.
It would.
Because I can't even do it. But
yeah. Well,
and
I think
you can be a yes man to a point, and then you have to be realistic about this. I mean,
like you're not the squeaky wheel saying, "Hey, boss. This is not what you hired me for. This is not what you pay me for." And I think in a lot of these in-house situations where they're stripping down the art departments, and I'm sure some bigwig just thought, oh, it's the art department. They could still do that.
Yeah.
And then you got to put a hand up and say,
they can do everything.
You know, I would love to look into training for it. I would love to send me to somewhere where I can learn a little bit more about it. But as of this point, you risk getting bad work. This is not what you paid me for. And I just feel like sometimes a lot of these people that are in those positions are not plugged in to the department itself to know to make that decision. So, you know, I don't feel afraid, Teresa, that you're going to be like kind of raising a red flag and saying something, but it looks like you've tactfully done it. But just remember, they can't judge you if you don't do a good job at this on your job for that. You know, it's like, this is not what you do. I really do feel bad for it, but like, instead of just red flagging it, come up with a few suggestions. Like, either I know someone great you can hire to get someone in here, or bring me and let me try a course or two.
Yeah, and maybe, I don't know. I guess I encourage Teresa not to be shy about this ultimatum approach. This just feels unfair to me.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm getting that she doesn't know how to say it, though. The fact that she's writing in, there are certain kinds of people that would just say in no uncertain terms, hey,
which is why it's super helpful for that very reason that you pointed out, West, kind of maybe do some rehearsing ahead of time and jot down some keynotes. And let's say they react this way, you've got follow up to that. Let's say they react in manner, you know, option B, you've got a reaction to that. You're just completely ready.
Yeah. And I can imagine that she's going to go into her boss and say whatever she's going to say. And they're going to say, yep, we hear you. We just don't have the budget for it right now. So,
but they don't pay her to worry about it. That's what they should be doing. And I just hate that this is getting pushed down to her.
I like the way that you said that, Nick. That's a good point.
No, it's true, because it's like when you're in those positions and you're making decisions on who stays and who goes, whatever, that's your responsibility now to follow up for who's missing, not her. You know, so like, it's almost like, I hate this because I think my students even hear these like horror stories of places. And I'm like, guys, that's just one place. And and to her point, this is just your place. No, this is not commonplace and this should not happen. You know, it's just bad supervision and bad management. And I really hate hearing that, but she's just got to be positive with it. I think if they're already doing this to her, then even if she went tactfully and kind of explained it well, they could probably still say, you know, deal with it. But she's just got to be careful that they don't let her go if she is a little too forceful. I know a lot of times when I was a one-man show at a place, I remember one of my first jobs, and they were like, all you do is complain. And I was like, well, I'm asking for help, you know. And I didn't realize until someone told me that I looked like I was always the squeaky wheel guy, because I was promised this and this and this, but I didn't get any help. But I know where she's at. You don't want to cross that line in fear of like maybe looking like the complainer, and she's not.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know that, and I know that, and I bet her boss even knows. And I'm sure that they would ideally want to hire someone. I think I think you're going to have to find a way, Teresa, to communicate this to your bosses in a way that makes it a difference to them, because sounds like they don't really care that you're not comfortable doing
it.
What I would do, like, if you're, because she uses the line, she says it's rarely elegant code. So just saying, I don't know if this is the case, but if it's a website that relies on SEO in any way, you might say like, hey, my code is probably super SEO unfriendly.
Yeah. Why not?
And that's not doing anybody good.
Yeah.
So
not sure if that matters for your company or not, but something like that, make it kind of a dollars and cents thing for them. And then second thing would be, you know, ask yourself, how much do you hate this? Would you be willing to leave over it? And maybe take that stand and say, because usually I think when people would rather just keep you than fire you and find somebody else. So if you were to stand up, you might keep your job and they might hire someone else.
Yeah.
Although it could go the other way too. So you kind of have to figure out your situation and see how it's likely to go.
Keep the company's interest in full priority when you're talking. So this is all about the company.
Don't make it a me story.
You don't want them to have a bad reputation that they're not putting out good work.
Yeah, exactly. Because you just being uncomfortable and it taking you a little longer than someone else to do it, they may not, it sounds like they don't really care. So come up with a different argument, I guess.
So next week's show, Teresa and her boss are here live. Let's talk to them.
It's like the more like Jerry Springer show.
I would love to
Teresa,
be able to
say you
that.
That are correct.
Oh my gosh. Teresa, we have a surprise for you. It's your boss.
Let's show up at our work with a camera crew and everything.
Love it.
Oh, let's do it.
I hope that made her giggle. That's hilarious.
Good luck, and let us know what happens for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'd love to know.
All right, cool. So, Mikkel, you want to take this next question?
Sure, from Janine.
Yeah.
I'm a web designer and have the toughest time, emphasis there, getting content from clients, especially good content. I know you've addressed client content a few times, but I'm still wondering how you streamline the process while designing a high-quality website. We all know content is queen, and the best websites are built around content, but not the other way around. But when I require the client to provide the content before I start design, it takes forever to actually get the project completed. And often the content lacks clarity and convincing message altogether. On the flip side, if I just build the site and I leave it up to the client to upload themselves, I find it really difficult to actually design a truly effective website. Mm-hmm. How do you make this process efficient, design kick-ass websites that actually convert, and develop a good system that keeps things moving forward?
I love
this
question.
We can all relate
Janine.
With this. We can all relate with this.
Absolutely. And I've got a really easy thing to say here.
Go for it, Wes.
So basically, easier said than done, I guess, but I've just in my process and in the way we do things now here, I do not ask my clients for content anymore. Copywriting is part of the proposal for several reasons, because we know that this is going to happen. They're not going to give us the content, and it's not going to be good because they generally don't have, you know, web copywriters on staff. So what we decided when we decided that we were going to be building these like high functioning websites that are really designed around conversions, I've said this before on the show and designers probably hate hearing it, but the written content is so much more important than the design in order to convert customers. They've done so many studies on that where they have just a really bare bones, kind of ugly website and a really beautiful one next to it. And if it's got really good copy, that ugly one always just performs better. So again, I know we hate hearing that as designers, but so I don't even give clients the choice anymore. I just say, this is what it's going to cost for the copy. Mm-hmm. And there you go. Like that's kind of the only option I give them now. What do you guys think about that?
But you still got to get them to give enough content in the discovery phrase to even base the copy on.
That's easy. We schedule a phone meeting with them and my copywriter.
And obviously, if that never happens, you don't move forward.
Right. Well, I've never had any pushback on scheduling that meeting.
Of course.
Though,
but even so, though, like you're saying, even if for some reason someone doesn't do that, you're not going to go forward with anything until that meeting. And you know what I mean? So yeah, I think it's a great way to say that. And I think like in my case, I've been doing the same thing. We're bringing in a copywriter at a point where I can tell in the first few calls that maybe they won't be good content providers. And yeah. I bring that up as a kind of a, you know, in the menu of what we can do. But most of them do have this content, and I love being almost a liaison and kind of helping with it every once in a while and making crafting it better. But to your point, I think this might be a great thing for Janine is to offer that in your services.
Yeah.
Like
and
you
I
said.
Think that, and
now
I think the
you
important,
can take credit
the
for that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And the important step is to not even offer it as an option. Like if they do push back on it, then maybe you can say, okay, well, we can take that out. But the thing you don't want to say is, I mean,
it's optional.
You know, yeah, you want to just build it in.
You don't want to
say
yeah,
here's
gotcha.
What it, like partner up with a good copywriter. I love mine now, and you know, he does quality work, and his work is written in order to persuade people to take action on the website.
Sure.
Anything else is just going to be a lot less effective, and so it's money well spent. But as soon as you can kind of put it into those words for your client, they're going to want to pay for that.
Yeah.
If they have a budget to begin with. And if they don't have a budget to begin with, I just don't work with them. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. Add it in as a necessary and then talk about it, if they can say, oh, we've got that covered, and you pull it out of your proposal, then make sure you get some those strong deadlines in there as far as when that content is provided, and maybe give them a template that has to be filled with that content, so you don't have any missing pieces. Just as a way, I've been doing that as well, where it's like making sure there's little blocks of things that I know always are needed for packaging, for branding, whatever. And it's almost a checklist that they have. And if they're providing it and I'm not going to do it, or my copywriter's not going to do it, that checklist is sent to them to be like, here's everything that's on your end and everything that's part of, you know, your deliverable. I can't do anything until I get it. So it helps.
And then a scant 9 months later, you're ready to go.
They approve that proposal and you're like, yeah, I'm on to so many other things right now.
That's good. It's good to kind of come up with little blocks of what's needed. And then, I give that to my copywriter. I used to just let him go kind of on his own. But and then I figured, then it's I started realizing when I work with him that we need to have a little bit, I need to kind of come up with those little content blocks, like you said, of what's needed. Mm-hmm. And then he can fill those up. But then there's a lot of times when a client doesn't want to pay for an entire website of copy. So in that case, what we do is generally just reuse the copy that's on the less important pages, like, you know, the about page, pages that are not really geared toward a conversion.
Nice.
But like all landing pages need the professional copy, you know, anything that's like a product description, those kinds of things that where it's important.
Yes.
Then that's where we bring in the big guns. So Good. Hopefully that is something that you can do, Janine. It's changed my process about 1,000%. So, Good. Yeah. All right, cool. Nick, you want to take the next one?
Next one's from Brittany Lang, and she writes, I run my own small design business in San Diego, California. Yeah.
San Diego.
It's like the craft brew capital of the West Coast now.
It's also German for a whale's vagina. I don't
know. See, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
She has recently activated the credit card payment option for her clients, and she's just curious to know, do you give your clients the option to pay by credit card? If so, do you charge them the credit card transaction fee that FreshBook deducts from the payment?
And that's
great because, that's on PayPal and everything. Anything. So you guys do that?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you particularly do it? You put 8% added when it's going to be a credit card payment?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
3%.
Oh, 3%. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, wow. What state are you in again?
Mikhail's wetting her beak on that a little bit.
Is that on there? I'm asking you this because I'm right there with her. I just started realizing this and where I'm seeing a loss.
Yeah, if you've
got
big invoicing, you just get dinged like crazy. It's not
exactly fair. Now, so do you put this as a baseline on all of your invoices or only the ones when they are going to do this kind of payment?
What if
they're mailing you a check?
If I know ahead of time. Yeah.
Okay.
If I know ahead of time. Oh, and then another thing that I used to do without knowing and so that I didn't have to knock on their door and ask, are you thinking about sending a check to my studio or are you thinking about paying? Yeah. So I would just note at the very base of the invoicing if you opt to pay via credit card or PayPal, here's the total.
I'm glad that's we're talking that because that's something I've never asked up front. It's so funny. And I think that would be part of the qualification too, in a way. Is why not ask up front just to know?
You can. How? But sometimes it makes me feel a little bit pestery, and it depends on the contact, right? The contact person with the company.
Correct.
So I might just decide to leave it alone, and I just put if you send a check to my studio, here's your amount. If you don't, here's your amount.
Perfect. Okay.
And if you're using something like FreshBooks or even like PayPal, what you would have to do almost is you would have to include the whole total. Because that's what they're going to pay online.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, so let's say the invoice was for $1,000.
It's a payment gateway of some kind.
Right. So the amount on the invoice would have to be $1,030.
Yes.
To cover that 3%. But then you'd have to have a line on there somewhere saying, but if you're just going to send a check, just send $1,000.
Yeah, there the convenience is awesome, but you get dinged. So this actually happened with a gentleman that has been supporting my business for years. He's a fabulous developer. And I noticed, because he had a huge invoice for me just recently, and I noticed that when I paid via PayPal that he did not incorporate that to his invoicing, which ended up being almost a grand. 3% was sure. almost a grand. And wow. he wasn't billing for that. And so I added it. I actually did him a solid and I added it to the next invoice that he sent me because he was even a little bit scared to bring it up with me. And I thought, business is business, man. Include mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah.
We have to cover all grounds here. So anyway, not only did it make me look awesome for him to support as a business, but it all adds up.
Oh, I love. Yeah. I think the first time I got the FreshBooks thing saying we received a payment and it was like this odd number with cents and everything. I'm like, right. mine are never mm-hmm. like that. And I was like, oh, that pesky little 3%.
Yes.
But boy, it adds up. And
it does. It absolutely does.
Sure does.
Yeah. And this answer that we're all in alignment with here mm-hmm. for Brittany may be a little bit shocking. So I'm really glad that she asked this question. Mm-hmm. This is great because I would imagine that a lot of people just assume not to incorporate it at all.
Yeah. Well, how many times do you go when you're like, if someone says, "Are you doing debit or credit card?" There's a few places they're like, "Oh, there's a dollar service fee." I'm like, what? You know, so they're telling you up front and same way you would be doing it with a client as well. And I love your choice of saying here it is. If you pay by credit card, if you pay by check, it's just 1,000 instead of 1,030. Right.
It's like the little convenience store by my house. Like, it's a $5 minimum on a credit card. It's like, you bastards. I just want my hangover Gatorade.
That is becoming more and more common. It's annoying. Now. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to buy three.
I know.
Well, hopefully that's a good question, a good answer.
Yeah, hopefully.
I think it's just another issue to worry about with all this online stuff, you know, but I think it's easy to handle.
Yeah, it is. And I just to answer for me, like, I think I've been getting checks lately. Mm-hmm. Cause that's the one thing, like getting these kind of more corporate clients, that's kind of more their policy. They don't generally like to pay with things with a credit card.
Yes.
But then you go into like 30 days, you know, net 30 payments mm-hmm. as well. So, but when I have a client that needs to kind of have a quick start, then I'll give them the PayPal info, but I haven't really, done the charging them of the fees thing yet. So, but if that becomes more common, then I probably will do that. Why not?
Nice.
Yeah. All right, cool. The next one is from Tracy and this one is in regards to our mood board episode. So, mm-hmm. I like getting these kind of follow-up questions.
Yeah.
She says, I was confused when you guys were talking about how many mood boards to present to the client. Do you do different mood boards based on a certain component? Mm. Or what reason would you have to create several mood boards? So if I'm doing a logo project, what would be an example of the mood boards I present be, and how would they be different? Mm-hmm. So I think what she's talking about is when I was talking about how in a web design, like before I start the design, I present two different mood boards to the client. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's like a pick A or B. Which do you like better to base the design on? And so they're different because you're giving them two choices of directions to go in. So one will have this style of it. Maybe it's like black and white images.
Or it's a theme.
Black mm-hmm. and white images with red, with a sans serif font. And the other one's got more kind of bright images. With a sans serif font and blue text mm-hmm. for an example, and a different mm-hmm. you know, and contrasting icons on each.
Yeah,
and so, both being equal success rate. Like you're saying, either one of these is a great solution. But what is your preference?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, in that case, you would definitely. It depends on how many you want to present, but I found it works really well for me to just have them choose between A or B, and then. Then based on which one they choose, now we can go into the design phase based on that set of choices.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you have anything to add about that? Like in terms of logos, you guys, like I've never really done mood boards with logos,
really
but
great. It's such an early phase of the project to just have a narrow down process straight away. It's awesome. So
it streamlines it so much more.
It really truly does.
Because I think
hopefully that clarifies a little bit better.
Yeah, and
because that was a good example.
You'd be shooting in the dark if you just gave them your eight logo concepts. But if you can give them two possibly maybe three, if in branding, yeah. I would say that, yeah. Like we said earlier, each one of these would be a successful way to go. But we want to know where you feel more comfortable with what you have an idea of what this brand should be, which one of these matches better in a way. And I had this conversation with the client last week where I was saying, guys, the main reason we're doing this is so that we as a team are looking at this and saying, here's our focus points. These are our things that when we are 2-3 weeks into this, we could say, well, let's go back to what we loved about mood board A. That was what everyone loved and everyone agreed on would be the right way to go. So same with logos. I show particular brands and logos that I feel are in the zone of what our two themes might be. And you show examples of those and clearly mark specifically, these are not going to be copied. These are not, you know, yeah. Your logo is not your logo, but we're giving you a style vibe to say, are you in agreement with this look? And can you imagine it in this style? Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing. It's just you're showing examples of those things to really enhance what you're suggesting.
Yeah, because otherwise, like if you're just showing the mood board just to get approval, that can work too. Mm-hmm. Like maybe if I was going to do a web design and I just wanted to show it to the client to say, hey, are we on the right track with this? Mm-hmm. Then we would not have to do two, maybe. Yeah. Maybe then it's just the one, yes or no.
Yeah.
You know, and if not, what's throwing you off about it? But mm-hmm. yeah, so mood boards can be pretty helpful. They can be a good way to, nice shorthand to get you going in the right direction.
I got to tell you, I even this morning, we were putting together kind of the first ideas for a mood board. And I had a look and a feel in mind that I could not pinpoint. Like I couldn't even... I was like, I know it looks like this, and I was whatever. And I came across American Wood Type as this style and this vibe. And when the minute I searched it and the first like things of Google Images showed up, I was like, that's it. So now I know what my first mood board is going to be for the branding, because this encapsulates it like perfectly. So I think it even helps us on the flip side too, to be more defined with what we're showing, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, sweet.
Cool.
All right, cool. So we've got one more here, but I do think that maybe we've got some time to do a bonus question after this. So
cool.
So this one is from Sean. You want to take it away, Mikkel?
Sure. It's really sweet and short.
This is a short one. We like these ones.
Would you display your minimum amount you're willing to work for on your website?
No.
I would not either. This might be a really easy... quick one to answer as well.
Why wouldn't you? I'm curious why wouldn't you?
I've often struggled with this, especially lately, because of this kind of new business model trying to do higher value, you know, higher price point clients. So I did consider this, saying, and there actually is kind of a version of this on my website now, where it says when people are making a qualification call with me, a strategy call. One of the questions is, do you have at least a $5,000 budget for this? And that's like bare bones for a website for me. That's the lowest, that's for like a landing page. And if it makes them say yes or no to that. And if they say no, then I will email them back and say, you know, sorry, but you don't have the budget that we require for a project. So we're not going to be able to set up this call with you after all. We say it in a nice way, mm-hmm. but so it's not really saying like, here's our minimum, but it kind of conveys that.
Sure.
You know, but I think I'm taking that out because I think so, because first of all, it hasn't worked. People are still setting it up saying no. Like you would think mm-hmm. that, you would think that question even being there would be like,
that is so interesting. Are you serious?
Yeah, they still try to set up the call with that. And that's why it's not quite working the way.
Yeah.
You know.
They think they can work something on you.
I guess so, but they can't. So
I look at it this way. Like whatever you're aspiring to be, think of if that place or that person is putting their prices on their website. I feel like that kind of, that's the last thing I want anyone to see on there is a price mm-hmm. list or anything.
Me too.
If you are more junior and really need to show that the value of you being junior, yeah, and your prices could help you win a few accounts or a few small jobs. I'd be okay with it. As long as it was detailed
and
it showed, but I just feel like it would cheapen, if I had that on there. And that's, if anything, let me, I'd rather, verbally say that and explain why rather than have it be listed on my site and maybe deter someone from like even opening up a discussion or talking. Cause I think we can convince them otherwise, even if we just did that last week.
I agree with this distinction.
You know,
actually.
The minimum, he was like, wow, okay. And then I was like, well, I felt like he was on the brink. So I was like, let me explain why. Here's the value we bring. And it has to be in that zone, because anything less, I would be doing a quarter of what I just listed to you. Mm-hmm. So he instantly was like, whoa, okay, I think we can talk now. So I had a better chance of explaining rather than I think anything on your website would do.
Hmm. Yeah. It's cool. True. Like the only reason I would ever be tempted to put that minimum on the website is to get rid of those people that I know they're not going to have the budget. But what you said is absolutely right, Nick. Like sometimes someone thinks their budget is down here, but when you get through with them, like explaining to them why it should cost this much and why you charge that much, then you can kind of see some movement. I will disagree, though. I don't think you should ever put your prices on your website as a, hey, look how cheap I am.
Yeah,
that's never going to work out.
Yeah, that
for
might
you.
Be. Yeah.
As soon as we start just competing on price alone, guess what? Then there's 99 designs. That's probably cheaper than like.
Yeah, barf.
There will always be someone who will do a logo for $5. So
yeah, I you know what, we're in the situations where
there's a happy medium here though.
Yeah, in the situations that I've basically recommended it to, specifically younger, maybe even still in school or a school or 1 year out, was to because they were getting so hit up on by friends, family, and friends of friends and friends of family, thinking it was just this like they were going to do a favor for them and do something for cheap. And I've said, look about this idea for minimums. And like for one designer, I was even telling him, your minimum should be $500. You shouldn't be anywhere below that, because it's like we were talking about all those factors when we talked about minimums. And all that's done for him is kind of in a very smaller way, it's filtered out a lot of the people that were looking for just favors. So he's not at a point where this could offend anybody that's in a bigger budget. And I think he should know when to take that off. I know what you're saying, Wes, and I totally get it. But be conscious of it. Hey, if you build up your business in 6 months and you're kicking ass and all of a sudden your average rate is $1,200 or $1,500 for a job, take it off. You're doing good, you know? But it might be needed for a few of those people, so they're at least taken seriously, I think, too.
For a certain time frame.
Yes, correct.
And then, a temporary situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's all just a matter of if it makes sense for you.
And don't have it like in the first header on your website. $500!
It's so amazing to me whenever I look, like whenever I do a Google search on anything, like anything with web design, the top ads, like the Google ads, always say like, website for $250. Oh, like God, the price is right in the like the ad headline.
Or when it's a sale, it's like this weekend only logos for, I'm like, guys, don't do that. Are you know?
Right. Yeah, well, these are not.
That is actually, on a personal level, that's the reason I've decided to unfollow some accounts the moment I see that.
Yeah.
Like, we're not in alignment here. Bye. Yeah.
There's no fire sale on websites.
No, please
no. Yeah. All right. And since we kind of have some time left, I thought I'd do one more bonus question. And this one's actually a two-parter. And this is from Ben Wilson. And it says, the first question is, do longer hours worked in a day truly make for a hardworking designer? And the second part is, how can a young professional maintain healthy work-life boundaries without coming across as a deadbeat to a current or future employer? This is a good one, because we were talking recently about, you know, how agency life, there's no such thing as the 9-to-5 anymore. Like, it's all about super long hours. So does that make you just like a hard worker or kind of a chump to have to stick around work all day, every day?
Well, hopefully you're in a place that's going to reward you for that work, I think. that's where maybe it's different. I know a lot of people who do that kind of grind for year after year without the reward, but then they're afraid to go look somewhere else because there's not a lot of good jobs. So they feel kind of stuck. But then there's those places that really do reward you for that and make it known that you want a promotion, make it known that you want to grow within that company and you're not interested in taking off. I think that's maybe that could be the first kind of stage in identifying where you're at. I think is really, that's what you really need to look at first.
Yeah, it's you a good know? Good distinction. And Ben did write an earlier draft of this. sorry, Ben, I made you rewrite it to shorten it up because it was just, it was really long. But he basically kind of goes into more detail about how he's a father and, you know, it's hard to see his kids grow up without him, I guess. Sure. And so just wondering, like, that work-life balance.
That balance.
Yeah.
And we have designated, I know we've done at least one about about this.
Have we done an episode about this?
Quality of life and balance, you know, how it's a balancing act. For healthy purposes, like how to weigh this out.
Yeah.
And, you know, depending on what you're going through on a personal level at any given time, you might be, times might be really rough. And I know for me, I'll admit it, I set my alarm stupid early so that I don't miss out when Oakley's up. If it, if it's temporarily for a good few months or whatever to catch up, if the money, if the project's there and it's a way to just make extra cash, I mean, why would I not do that to help us out as a family for a short period of time?
Yeah. But I guess the question really is, like, if it's going on forever and there's no end in sight,
that's not healthy.
That might be the time to start thinking about another job.
Right. You gotta be honest with yourself about
Did Ben say where he lives?
Let's look that into that more.
Curious.
It's so long.
I'll give you a little story if you want to look in to see where he's at.
Okay.
But just to show that there are good jobs out there, and I struggle with this because I try to help all my grad students looking, networking, finding. And one of them found a fantastic entry-level job. He wrote me and just was basically, and I just want to show that these exist. He got his medical, got his dental and vision. He gets free lunch, up to $55 a week. They have an on-site gym, free snacks, unlimited drinks. It's like an Adobe CC to use at home, plus an iPhone. And this is entry-level right out of school. And like this place, I got a call from their recruiter as a recommendation for him. I looked them up. It's so nice to see that there is a place that totally values the creatives and they can come in and be taken care of really great. And I think that's a smart thing to
do
because
so cool.
You're going to get the best employees out of that. I mean, you know, they took them out to lunch his first day. I'm like, and I kind of laugh too, because I go, man, thinking back years ago, that's what happened anywhere, right? You had a welcome party. It was like, you know, people, there were benefits. But those are slowly being stripped away from all of these opportunities. So I'm just so happy that one, he got it, and two, it shows that these jobs do exist. So if Ben's kind of struggling with it, you know, test the waters a little bit, see what's out there, and there might be a place that really treasures having great talent and hard work. You know?
And doing some detective work. Uh-oh. He didn't say where he's from, but the 952 area code turns up. Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Ah,
so,
there you go.
Okay.
I think they've got a pretty thriving
Minneapolis,
you know, design community there. So
it's kind of amazing. Go to Duffy Design Group, get a job there.
Maybe that's where he works.
I'm saying that's like the place. And I know they're there. But I think that it shows there's a great a thriving creative business and design business out in that area. So
yeah.
God,
and
man,
when you
look,
feel undervalued, like I can't stress this enough. Like I run into this so much with people where they don't like their jobs, but they're still kind of afraid to go anywhere else or to look. Well, I think they'll look, but I don't know. I think just don't sell yourself short, man. Like if you're good and you have paid your dues, and it sounds like you've been doing that. And if they're still abusing you, then it might be time for a change of scenery. So don't. Mm-hmm. Don't think it's out of reach.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, it's true. I think they're still out there and you got to kind of find that place that's going to love having someone like you and promote you and do good things for you, because I don't think anyone wants to jump around from job to job. I think that just happens when it's not good.
Yeah. And you know? it's not like we're living in an era anymore like our grandparents where you got a job and you stayed there till the day you died. I mean, yeah, it's everyone changes jobs every 4 years, mm-hmm. it seems like. So, you know, and to answer your question, you absolutely can maintain a healthy work-life boundary. And it's a matter of where you work, like Nick mm-hmm. was saying. Last proper job I had, it was in-house for a big company, but it was they treated us so well, like the opposite of what you're saying, like to where at a certain point they're like, yeah, we're just all taking Fridays off now.
Exactly.
You know, like work the core hours, but other than that, just get your work done. I know agency life is not typically that way, but there's more to life than agency life too. So,
but yeah. And hey, if business is good and you're part of the reason for it, it should be rewarded. And I think what you mentioned is a great example of when companies do that. It's like, yeah, guess what? You put in 80 hours last week, the whole team. Guess what? We'll have Thursday and Friday off next week because we can. Like, you know, it's like that the companies and these owners have to kind of start understanding that. And I wish that, remember the trend probably about 10 years ago when like Nike, probably even Google in its first few years, were so, it was written about how great of a company they are to work for, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just think maybe that kind of has to come back a little bit when, you know, maybe it's because there's so many smaller companies now. I don't know. You know, mm-hmm. that could be why. I think a lot of these companies are small and don't know any better.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Best of luck to you, Ben. Hopefully you find something good or at least change your situation because, mm-hmm. Hate to see that happen for long term.
Yep.
All right, cool. Good listener question show, guys. Yeah. Want to keep you guys sending in those listener questions to questions@thedeependdesign.com. And, you know, we love the audio ones. And I have gotten a few emails where people are like, I wanted to send an audio question, but didn't know what the phone number was. There's no phone number, guys. Just get out your microphone and make an audio file and email it to us. That's all it takes.
That's all we need.
Same email address. Just Dropbox send link, it as an attachment.
Dropbox link, with anything you need.
Exactly. You need. Get it to us, carrier pigeon, whatever you got to do.
Or come to the DGDC Twitter. Studios.
Yes, exactly. The studios. So go to, or you can ask a short one on Twitter just using the hashtag DGDC. All right. And follow us on Instagram at deeply graphic.
Yep.
I always forget that. Yeah. that's the one. And on Facebook. And on LinkedIn as well. Do you guys have any links you want to throw out there where people can find you online?
Bocelli.
Oh, I just remembered that we were going to give like mini shout outs.
Oh.
And designate like a person that, remember?
We can do that next time. I think we kind of did between the Netflix thing and the missing Richard Simmons.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll keep that in mind for next time.
Because I've got one too, but yeah,
I just think that it's getting really redundant to note where people can find us online.
Yeah, but you know, that's people may not listen to every episode.
We could just shorten it a little bit.
Yeah, if you guys don't want to anymore, we don't have. Mm-hmm. We can just skip that part. That's fine.
I think it's okay every so often. Yeah. For sure.
Okay.
All right. So no links this week. Mikkel is going incognito.
Yes.
So just stick to the Instagram and the LinkedIn and the Facebook for now. All right. Keep designing. Catch us next time on the Deeply Graphic Designcast.